From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Forgetting someone's name, getting caught with spinach in your teeth. We all experience cringeworthy moments, but some people seem never to grow out of their awkward teenage years. Psychologist Tai Toshiro tells us why these mishaps happen and why some people are more awkward than others. His book is called Awkward: The Science of Why We're Socially Awkward and Why That's Awesome. Toshiro says that awkward behavior can have its advantages.
They're going to miss certain social cues or social information that everybody else is picking up on. But it also suggests an upside, which is that they might be seeing the world differently, and this focused, sharp perspective could have payoffs in the long run.
The upside of awkward, on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Shaking hands with someone when your palms are sweaty. Calling a friend's new girlfriend by their ex-girlfriend's name. Showing up to a dinner party in sweatpants. We all have our share of awkward moments, moments that make us cringe, moments we relive with embarrassment. Why do these moments happen? What are the evolutionary roots of awkwardness? And why are some people more awkward than others? Last summer, we spoke with Tai Toshiro, who weighed in on all things embarrassing, uncomfortable, and nerve-wracking. He's the author of Awkward: The Science of Why We're Socially Awkward and Why That's Awesome, published by William Morrow, an imprint of HarperCollins. Toshiro is a psychologist who has written for the New York Times and the Washington Post. He previously taught at the University of Maryland. To start off, I asked what exactly he means by awkward.
Well, it's helpful to think of awkward moments and awkward people as a starting point. So awkward moments are just deviations from minor social expectations. So these could be things like having your zipper zipped or not having spinach between your two front teeth. But when we have these minor social faux pas, we experience this flood of emotion. So we could get embarrassed or our face might flush and blush. And it's because that we're deviating from the social script, and humans are really attuned to these small deviations. Because it suggests that we might not be cooperative or we might not get it, and that could threaten our social belonging, which as humans is a really important thing, to belong to a group and be in good standing.
So those are awkward moments.
That's right. And awkward people obviously have more awkward moments, but it's because they see the world differently. So there's a lot of cognition studies and eye tracking studies where they find that awkward people actually see the world a little bit differently than non-awkward people. I can give you an example of how that works. So if you could imagine that life unfolds before you on a stage, and let's say that stage is broadly illuminated. Well, you could see actors come on the stage, actresses leave the stage, probably spend most of your time center stage because that's where most of the central interactions take place. And that's how most people see the social world. Now, awkward people, by comparison, see their social world spotlighted. And that spotlight tends to fall a little left of center. So that means that they're going to miss certain social cues or social information that everybody else is picking up on. But it also suggests an upside, which is that they might be seeing the world differently. And this focused, sharp perspective could have payoffs in the long run.
A minute ago when you were talking about the awkward moments, it implied that it serves a purpose. These moments serve a purpose for someone to kind of put them on the right track. Is there a purpose to awkwardness?
Yeah, there is. You know, for most of human history, for about 99% of human history, life expectancies were under 40 years old, actually. And so there was a distinct possibility you could die from hunger or not having enough drinkable water or attacks from other groups. And so in these small groups of about 40 to 50 people, it was really essential that everybody contribute and do their part, because a rogue member who wasn't working hard enough or was cheating or stealing could actually threaten the survival of everybody. So humans needed a way to say, well, how do we know if somebody is not on board with the group goals? And it turned out that in every social interaction, if you had expectations about how those were supposed to go, then that could give you an early kind of warning signal about group members who might not be have the best interests of the group in mind.
You write about all this from in a very personal way because you, I don't know whether you still call yourself awkward, but you certainly were growing up. Give us some examples.
Oh, boy, there were so many. You know, I've been awkward for as long as I can remember. Most awkward people will tell you that they are that way, that for as long as they can remember being social, they've been kind of awkward. And you have a hard time picking up on social cues. You don't quite process social information in the same way. And, you know, there was something my parents did that might be a good specific example of this. When we'd go to like a Wendy's, let's say, to get some hamburgers, this is a pretty routine interaction for most kids. Let's say they're 8, 9, 10, 12 years old. But for me, what would happen is we'd park in the parking lot there, and they'd turn around, and they'd say, it's time to mentally prepare. And this was a familiar kind of phrase, and that meant that we were going to engage in a Socratic dialogue about what I should expect in this interaction and how I was going to navigate it. So they'd ask me questions like, what's the first thing you should look for when you get inside? And for me, I had to remember that I should look for the line, not because I wanted to cut to be first or to be selfish, just because sometimes it didn't occur to me or I didn't see the line, and then I'd make this mistake that would have social consequences. You know, once I was in the line, they'd say, well, you should think about what you should order. You should get your money ready. You should say thank you. Make sure you look before you turn around with your tray so you don't bump into anybody. So for most kids, they would kind of intuitively understand how to do this, but for me, it took kind of dozens of Socratic dialogues like this and dozens of instances of practice for me to be able to intuitively navigate those situations.
That's psychologist Tai Toshiro here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about Toshiro's book, Awkward, The Science of Why We're Awkward and Why That's Awesome. What kind of cues were you missing? Why were you not seeing that there was a line? Or why were you not aware that the next thing that was going to happen was you'd need to order?
Yeah, you know, it's some of these details about specifically why awkward people don't pick this up are still being figured out at this point. But we do know that they, if you do eye tracking studies and you actually watch where their pupils look in a room, they just look at the world differently. I think one of the best examples is eye contact. So if you've ever talked to an awkward person, a lot of times they'll have trouble making consistent eye contact, which is pretty uncomfortable for the other person. And they might think, oh, this person's aloof or they don't care about what I'm saying. But in fact, what we know is that what the awkward person is doing is they're trying to decrease the intensity of that interaction. Because what most people do when they, you know, are talking to somebody is they'll look them directly in the eyes. And that's a smart thing to do because that's the most information-rich part of the face. Awkward people, by comparison, in these eye tracking studies, reflexively look at the chin or the ears. Now, those aren't as information rich, of course. So you're missing out on valuable social information right from the get-go in a social interaction. And that sets you behind then in trying to figure out what's going on.
It sounds then as if awkwardness is genetic.
There is a genetic component. So with boys, it's about 52% heritable. And with girls, it's about 39% heritable.
I'm not quite sure I understand percentages used that way.
Half of the reason why boys end up awkward, for example, is about half of it's genetic. So it's something about how their brain ends up getting wired and how it ends up functioning that predicts their awkwardness. The other half would be environmental things like the parenting environment or the school environment. But they do show a biological predisposition towards not processing social information in the same way that other kids would.
You write about awkward and non-awkward people, but, I mean, we're all awkward at some point. Is there really anybody who can say, I'm not awkward?
I don't think so. I haven't met him yet, but we all have awkward moments, certainly. And, I mean, even with time, sometimes those become pretty funny as time passes. But in the moment, they're pretty embarrassing. And we all just sometimes miss a social cue or we misread a situation. or we just don't quite execute in the way that we need to, and then we have an awkward moment. I think that's one of the fun parts about writing this book is that it wasn't just about awkward people. It turned out to say something about all of us and how we can all feel socially uncomfortable. And I think there's a lot of sociological data that suggests that we're all feeling a little bit more awkward these days.
We're all feeling more awkward these days.
Yeah, about in fact, about 55% of people will say they feel awkward most of the time, which is a pretty high rate. The real rate's probably around 15% of people who actually have these kinds of deficits or difficulties that we're talking about. You know, there's a lot of reasons for that. I think we're more urban than we used to be, so we're around a lot of strangers, and that creates situations that are ripe for awkwardness. The technology, I think, has made some things awkward as well. And so there's all these sociological shifts that have made social life a little harder to read, and it's a little harder to know exactly what to do in any particular situation.
Is perhaps the difference in part that many of us are awkward in our early teen years, and many of us feel we kind of grow out of that, and the folks you call awkward people don't grow out of it?
Yeah, that's exactly true. That's kind of how it goes. So middle school, for example, is peak awkwardness, I think, for most people. And a lot of people will grow out of that as time goes on. You know, awkward people will mature and progress as well, but some of these small social expectations still appear vexing to them. I thought at one point, if awkward people could just skip the first 5 minutes of social interactions, they'd probably be a lot better off, you know, because they're good people who have good hearts and they want to do right, you know, and be cooperative. There's something about those small little social graces that occur early in an interaction that really trips them up.
But of course, it's those first encounters, the first impressions that count for so much.
You're so right. You know, they even have these studies where they'll have strangers sitting in a circle and they'll just have each person stand up and say their name. And then at the end, they have people rate the personalities of everybody else in the group. And one, people are really confident to make those personality ratings based off that really small slice of behavior. But the second thing is that people tend to agree if somebody's extroverted versus introverted, socially skilled versus not socially skilled. And I think some of those judgments are okay, but the shame, I think, is when people foreclose on wanting to get to know somebody better based on these really small slices of early interaction.
Awkwardness is often associated with a strong niche interest, someone who obsesses over the films of one director, or like you did, someone who memorizes sports stats. Why is this associated with awkward?
Awkward people are very enthusiastic, and that's why they like to nerd out over things, whether that's their leisure interests or an academic subject or a career interest. They're kind of charged up, but they tend to be charged up about things that aren't the typical interests that most kids or even most adults might have.
But that focus and that enthusiasm for something then is also associated with giftedness.
That's right. There's dozens of studies that find an overlap between social awkwardness and what psychologists call giftedness or striking talent. So striking talent's the idea that you're excellent or exceptional in a specific area. And I think part of what drives that, part of the mechanism, is if you have a sharp focus and if you're very enthusiastic about something, these would be great ingredients for what we call deliberate practice. It's oftentimes talked about as the 10,000 hours needed to achieve mastery or expertise in something. Well, if you were really focused and really, you know, persistent and enthusiastic, those would be great things to drive deliberate practice, which then could drive the development of striking talent.
I'm sure I'm not the only one listening to this and thinking trouble navigating social situation, intense interest in one subject, giftedness. This sounds like someone on the autism spectrum. And I know you address that in the book.
Yeah, I tried to be really careful with that in one of the chapters and talk about that in great detail. They are related to each other in the same way that someone might be melancholy but not have major depressive disorder, or be anxious, kind of high-strung, and not have an anxiety disorder. Someone can be socially awkward but not necessarily have what they used to call Asperger's or autism.
A lot to think about there. We have to take a quick break here, and when we come back, we'll talk about what impact is social media having on our in-person interactions. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. A first kiss, a job interview, a class reunion, all these moments have the potential for awkwardness, especially if you have trouble following social cues like body language. My guest today is Tai Toshiro, psychologist and author of Awkward, The Science of Why We're Awkward and Why That's Awesome. In his words, being awkward is a form of social clumsiness, and some of us are more clumsy than others and stay that way longer than others. People who are very likable, able to make friends and talk to strangers easily. Where is that strength coming from?
I think it's important to start with a distinction between being likable and being popular. And although one would think those are two highly related concepts, they're actually pretty weakly related. So if you do these big studies in high schools, you find that the popular kids aren't necessarily the likable ones, and vice versa. But I think the thing to shoot for is to be likable. And among the hundreds of things that could predict being likable, there's really three variables that pop out consistently. And that's be fair, be kind, and be loyal. And people who embody these three characteristics consistently in their social interactions are consistently rated as more likable than other people.
And how does that relate to awkward? In other words, is it more difficult for awkward people to let folks around them know that they are fair, kind, and loyal?
Unfortunately, I think it can sometimes. And, you know, the important caveat is that awkward people at their core are no less likely to be, you know, fair, kind, or loyal. It's just they have a hard time showing it sometimes early in an interaction. And probably the thing that gets threatened the most is the fairness variable, because they'll do things on accident, like cut in line or cut somebody off in a conversation. They might be overly blunt about something. And these small social faux pas don't have any malice behind them, but they send people the wrong message.
You underscore that awkward people usually get most of the social situation right. They misread just one or two details, and then there's an awkward moment. They judge themselves harshly, and often other people judge them. Why are we so hard in judging on that scale?
The idea, I think, behind why people do judge harshly in those situations is they think that small deviation, that small gaffe, is indicative that the awkward person has deeper character flaws or some kind of bad intent. And that's, you know, very seldom the case that that would be true. But we're just kind of wired as humans to over-identify threat. And so some of these social deviations can be interpreted as this person could be a threat to me or a threat to the group, even though that's not true.
And you write about some of the changes in family dynamics and parenting, the decline of multi-generational households, more helicopter parents paying a whole lot of attention. How is that affecting how children learn to navigate tricky social situations?
I grew up in the 80s when the self-esteem movement was really taking hold, which was the idea that if you tell kids they're worthwhile and build their self-esteem, that'll take care of a lot of problems. But it was problematic because it wasn't rooted to reality sometimes. So you told kids they were doing fine when in fact they weren't. I guess I was just surrounded by a bunch of realists, but they would, in a very kind, gentle way, have natural consequences. So if I misnavigated a certain situation or I mishandled a certain situation, they were very blunt about, hey, that's not acceptable and you need to correct the behavior. And I think if they hadn't done that, I would have been a lot worse off in life. So I think with some of the helicopter parenting and some of these situations where there aren't natural consequences for kids, that really sets them up for failure then down the road, because they don't experience firsthand what it means to make some of these mistakes or to misread some of these situations.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass, speaking with psychologist Tai Toshiro, author of Awkward, The Science of Why We're Awkward and Why That's Awesome. Your parents certainly were awesome, as you describe it. One of the things I was struck with was that already in junior high, you made this intense, organized study, a half hour every night before bed, reviewing the day, planning the next day. I got to tell you, I was worried that that kind of intense scrutiny would tie you in knots. Was it a good thing?
It was a good thing. I don't know if that would have been a good thing for all kids. You know, when I started writing the book, a friend of mine, who's awkward and a great guy, he told me a story that I think is useful. He said when he was a kid, around 11 or 12 years old, he started taking apart some of the household appliances. So he started with the toaster, and his parents would walk in the kitchen, and all the toaster parts would be laid out on the kitchen table. They say, oh, he took apart the toaster again. He's like, yeah, but for him, he didn't, you know, it wasn't good enough to know that this box produced toast. He needed to study the individual parts and understand their function and then put them back together in a way that made sense to him. And that's kind of how the awkward mind makes sense of the world in general. It's very systematic and very methodical. And for, gosh, I think almost every awkward person I've known who's ended up doing well as an adult in social life, that's exactly what they did. They took apart different social situations, studied the specific cues and behaviors, and then eventually strung those together into something that actually looks pretty socially adept or socially fluent.
So what else can help awkward people pick up on social cues better?
Most social interactions we have during the course of a day are kind of scripted, it turns out. So one of the things I recommend to awkward people is to study good old-fashioned manners. Because they're really subtle kind of social behaviors. And if you enact the proper manners in a certain situation, that starts you off on the right foot for two reasons. One, it decreases your social anxiety because you have some confidence about how to navigate these early moments of an interaction. But it also then kind of guarantees you that you'll convey a sense of fairness and kindness early on, which sets the person ahead in the interaction in case they have a slip up or a gaffe later on.
Oh, because you've kind of made a down payment to in following accepted manners.
At least
you're trying to fit in.
That's right. So you let someone else go first in line, or you bring somebody coffee just because that would be a nice thing to do. It is like a down payment that says, hey, look, I want to do the right thing here. So if I mess it up sometime later, it's just because I made a mistake.
Dating is an area rife with potential for awkward moments. Is this because dating is considered such a high-stakes activity, so much is riding on it?
Yeah, that's exactly right. The awkward dating chapter was the easiest chapter to write, actually, because there were just so many stories and so many easy examples of how you can be awkward in dating and why dating is awkward. But yeah, the stakes are super high. You know, we want things to work out so much. We're so hopeful. And we take the other person's judgment as such an important evaluation of who we are. And I think the other thing is that dating expectations are so idiosyncratic. It's really hard to know what one person to the next expects in any given moment. So it's very confusing. And I think most people would say that dating's pretty awkward.
What impact do you think social media is having on our ability to navigate relationships? Is it making us more awkward or less?
Well, you know, I think it's been twofold. There's kind of this thing now where being nerdy can be cool sometimes, which I never thought I'd see that day come. But there is some more room for kind of like the nerds and geeks and awkward people of the world. And I think the internet has been helpful and facilitative in that way. Because if you have unusual interests that you're really passionate about, the early chat rooms or now social media provides you a way to find other people with similar interests. So I think that's been positive and that's been good. It should have the goal of leading to in-person interactions eventually. But I think that's been facilitative. On the negative side, you know, it does put pressure on people. I think especially on kids and teens, they are very self-conscious about the number of likes they have, or if bullies decide to hop on there, then that can be a ding to somebody's self-esteem. So there are some negative sides to it, and people don't want to get too absorbed. But it can be, I think, a good tool as long as people see it as a means to an end, and that end being in-person interactions where you have a real face-to-face interaction with somebody.
I don't want to let you go without asking you to make the case for the last word in your subtitle, awesome. What is awesome about awkward?
Well, you know, it turns out there's a lot of things. I think there's the possibility of developing striking talent. I mean, that can be great and lead to some extraordinary kinds of outcomes. But I think the thing that really resonated with me the most was just the enthusiasm and passion that awkward people have for the things they love. And if people can get comfortable with that and be comfortable in their own skin and be proud about pursuing these things that they have so much love for, that can really be an awesome sort of experience.
This has been fascinating. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Psychologist Tai Toshiro is author of Awkward, The Science of Why We're Awkward and Why That's Awesome, published by William Morrow and imprint of HarperCollins. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.